And good morning to you. Welcome to hour number two of Better Lawns and Gardens. Tom McCubbin here, host emeritus for Better Lawns and Gardens and extension agent emeritus with the University of Florida. Lizzie's with me, keeping me under control here.
Just cracking that whip.
And we're having a great time, actually. So this is hour number two. Let me do a little follow-up here. In hour number one, we talked about wasps, and we mentioned the wasp controls or traps. And Howie from Peterson's Nursery says he has that. And they also have, what, an orchid program coming up that he talked about? Is that next weekend?
Yes, it's next weekend. Give them a call and check in on that. I'm asked Howie to give me a text update, so this way I get it. So as soon as I get it, I'll let you guys know.
Okay, well, that sounds fine. Very shortly, we're going to be talking with Roy Levin of EPLS, Environmental Pests and Lawn Services, as vice president and manager. Also a graduate of the University of Florida with degrees in entomology and nematology, and also a certified pest control operator. So he's also a good friend. So I'm looking forward to talking with him. And we're going to be talking mainly about lawn pests, and I want to ask him about the chinch bugs. Are they controllable? We'll find out, because we've been getting some resistant ones out there that have been giving us some real problems. And right now we have our dirty word of the day, which I have chosen as nitrogen. About 78% of the air is nitrogen, but not usable by plants in this form. Plants use nitrogen in two forms. One is nitrate, and the other is ammonium ions that are taken up by the plants. Here's something interesting. Thunderstorms produce about 1 pound of usable nitrogen per acre. Have you ever noticed that after storms, plants kind of green up? It's not just the water, but it can be the nitrogen is coming from the air also that the storms converts over. It helps make plants green and helps produce growth. When you want plants to grow, you apply nitrogen. Most gardens apply it in a mixed form like fertilizer of 666, 1608, or similar products, where the nitrogen is the first nutrient in the analysis. In the 666, it's 6, 1608, if it's 16. There's also plain nitrogen fertilizers like sulfur coated urea, plain urea, ammonium sulfate. Ammonium sulfate, by the way, if you want to make the soil acid, you can try to get something with ammonium sulfate in it. You also have blood meal, and there's more of them out there. They can be used separately or in combination products. One way, which is kind of neat, one way I tell if a lawn fertilizer has been applied, and I do get that question sometimes. They want to know if a company has applied the lawn fertilizer. And I look for yellow or blue particles, and these are the types of nitrogen, sulfur-coated urea or blue-tip urea. Plants and soil bacteria can have an interesting relationship with nitrogen. Beans are associated with a bacteria, rhizobium bacteria, in the soil that takes nitrogen from the air and makes it available to the beans. Most legumes have the same relationships. It's one reason we do not want to fertilize beans. Listen up. We don't want to fertilize beans and other legumes very much with nitrogen-containing fertilizer. If you overdo it, you will cause growth and a lack of flowers. You've heard of inoculating bean seed maybe with a nitrogen-forming bacteria. I am told our soils are full of the bacteria, and it's not necessary. So with any crop, you do not want to over-apply nitrogen, not just beans. It may produce lots of growth and limit flowers and fruits. Usually with other shrubs, 2 to 3 applications of a slow-release product is adequate a year. Studies have been done to show established trees may not need extra applications of nitrogen as they obtain enough from feedings of nearby shrubs and flowers. Vegetables and flower beds can benefit from fertilizer with nitrogen about every 4 to 6 weeks, except for crops like beans again. If plants do not get enough nitrogen, they turn yellow and growth is reduced. Nitrogen is a valuable nutrient, but don't overdo it, okay? I must add that nitrogen applications to turf and landscape plantings are prohibited in many areas during the summer to prevent water pollution in lakes and other bodies of water. So there you go. Dirty word of the day, nitrogen. For me, it's a great word because I really like seeing the growth out of my plants. And if your plants are not growing, an application of nitrogen may help. But you got to be careful. We don't do it during certain times of the year because it can wash get into our lake water and other groundwater sources. Got a list of things. I've got several. Let's see if I have anything here I need to take care of. Nope, I'm okay. One is the vegetables that we can plant. This is the funny time of year because we're ending up July pretty soon, and we're heading into August, and August starts the new garden season for me. I already mentioned some of the things I was doing during first hour, tilling, adding organic matter, and whatever. But right now, we can still plant things like cherry tomatoes, okra, southern peas, southern pumpkins, Seminole pumpkins. We can grow things like roselli, sweet potatoes, yardlong beans. And pretty soon, we're going to be putting into the August garden, around mid-month, eggplant, peppers, tomatoes, and I'm starting those from seed right now. So it'll be good gardening coming up. As far as flowers, I do have a question here about flowers. Let's see what the question is. It says, I'm growing impatiens in containers in the shade, but they're not producing the blooms as expected. The stems are long and lanky. How can I encourage more blooms? Impatiens do like some shade. There's no doubt about that. We do have the sun patiens, but in Florida during the summertime, even those can get baked out. Our summer is so hot and intense here. So impatiens enjoy some sunlight. So what we find, if we can go through and just give them a filtered sun, it tends to keep more compact and will cause them to flower a little bit better. So if you have impatiens that are not doing very well, if they're getting long and lanky, you might cut them back and then make sure they're in the filtered sun. And I think that'll work well for it. Coming up, your questions and discussion with Roy Levin, entomologist, nematologist with Environmental Pest and Lawn Services. We'll talk about lawn pests. Are chinch bug controllable? He'll tell us. And we'll be back. This is Better Lawns and Gardens. I'm Tom McCubbin, and this is Florida's Talk and Entertainment Network. Thank you for joining us here at Better Lawns and Gardens, coming to you from the Summit Responsible Solutions Studios. We hope you're having a great Saturday, and I know it's hot outside, and today I've got to get out and mow the lawns. I do my neighbor's lawn on both sides. I have the riding lawnmower, so I can get out there and just zip along and get them done.
That's so nice of you.
Well, the grass is starting to get a little...
As long as you have gas.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I told the story earlier, hour number one. I was down there in the vegetable garden tilling, then ran out of gas and went over to my neighbor. They didn't have gas. So I went down and got it. Now I have plenty of gas for everything. If you want to text us at this time, you can, 23680. Text line's been kind of low here this morning. But if you want to text us, 23680, as soon as we get done talking with Roy, you can give us a call, 1-888-45-LAWNS or 1-888-455-2967. They say I say it too fast, so here we go, 1-888-455-2967. How's that? Does that help
that's
out?
That's good. That's a lot of that's
right. Right now, it gives me great pleasure to bring into the studio here my good friend Roy Levin, University of Florida graduate with degrees in entomology and nematology. Roy, as I said, is a longtime friend, vice president and manager of Environmental Pest and Lawn Services. He's also a fellow tomato grower in his home garden. Roy, good morning to you.
Good morning, Tom. How are you?
I am just fine. I want to tell you, you have a good friend and a person giving you some pretty heavy endorsement down in Hunters Creek. I was in a meeting with Terry, and she's very proud of your company and what they have done for her lawn. And that's
for wonderful.
Sure. That's for sure. And I also want to say that you have some amazing employees. I have one that does my pest control for my house, which is Jeff. And I did not know, but his daughter recently became a veterinarian graduate with a doctor degree in veterinary science. I'm very proud of him and her for a daughter like that, as my daughter's a veterinarian also.
Yeah, he is very, very proud of her. Absolutely.
And he's always so happy and joyful when he comes to control my insects.
Absolutely. That's what we do.
I appreciate that. Anyway, you see lots of lawns. How well have they recovered from the winter?
So I think for the most part, they've recovered quite well. Obviously, every lawn is different. So, you know, the lawns that had A lot of these annual grass weeds have recovered a little bit less well because there's more dead areas to fill in. But overall, I was actually quite impressed on how quickly these lawns have recovered from the cold temperatures.
Yeah, I don't think I saw as much damage this year as I was expecting. I was expecting some lawns to really have a lot of dead in them, but they came back. I guess it wasn't as bad as I thought. I don't know. Some years I've seen some real damage to lawns.
Right, absolutely. I remember 20 years ago or so, some of these lawns just didn't come back because it was so cold. But
yeah.
But they recovered quite well.
We had 24 degrees in my house for 12 hours or so. Yeah. Now's a good time to fill those bare spots and weedy spots with new turf, right?
I think it depends on the situation. If it's just small areas, then yes, absolutely. If it's very large areas, I think you may want to wait a little bit longer until fall, just because it's so hot outside and it's rainy and the chinch bugs and slug webworms are so bad. And they're attracted to that new sod quite a bit. And so you may have a little bit of a hard time getting it to grow.
Yeah. I'm sure chinch bugs are a problem with St. Augustine at this time. What are you seeing?
Yeah, they are. Every year chinch bugs are quite problematic. We do have this resistance issue where they're resistant to different chemistries, insecticide chemistries. And so they're a little bit more challenging. But every year, they're real bad during the summer. This year may be a little bit worse. Last year was real bad as well.
I thought the cold would knock the chinch bugs back, but it doesn't seem to have. Yeah,
my friend, you and I both, but that did not happen.
Yeah, it just seems like we would get a reduction in them, but doesn't seem like it. Here's the big question, I guess. Can residents still control chinch bugs with products from the garden center, or are we wasting our time?
No, I don't think. I think that definitely residents can definitely control chinch bugs with products from the garden center. The key is using them correctly, not putting, follow the label, not putting way too much or too little, using the right application techniques. And if one product doesn't work, don't just go and put it over and over again. Use something completely different with different chemistry to try to control chinch bugs.
Yeah, and there are some different types of chemistries at garden centers, and you just have to learn about them or go to a garden center where you have knowledgeable people that can tell you the different types.
Absolutely, yes. Yeah. So there are different chemistries out there, and having the knowledge of what the different chemistries is important to manage, not just chinch bugs, but other pests.
Yeah, here's the problem I see it, is that most of the products that are common at garden centers are synthetic pyrethroids. And
Absolutely, I
would think if you use one synthetic pyrethroid, probably, and the chinch bugs are not controlled, you're probably not going to get them under control with another synthetic pyrethroid. Am I correct on that?
I think that for the most part, you're correct. There are different chemistries of synthetic pyrethroids. So one may work a little bit better than another in some situations, but it is definitely better to switch over to a completely different mode of action, different chemistry of insecticide.
Yeah, good. How frequently are you seeing resistant chinch bugs at this time?
I see them every day.
Do you really?
I really do.
They're that heavy. Is it worse this year than it was last year?
I think that it's last year we saw them the worst towards the middle and end of the summer, just because they had the time to develop and move around. We're in beginning to middle of summer, so it probably will be the same, maybe a little bit worse this year.
Okay, here's a neat question: do the resistant chinch bugs look any different from the common chinch bugs? How do we know the difference?
They don't look any different. They look identical. You can tell the difference between them visually.
Yeah, so what are you looking for to tell that you have resistant chinch bugs?
So if I put in an application and I know if I put it down in the correct rate and correct technique and I'm not getting good control, and I go and I switch to a different insecticide with a completely different mode of action and I'm still not getting control, that would raise my suspicion that we may be dealing with a resistant population. So at that point, I would take a look at it a little bit closer.
Yeah. So what are you doing? Are you just going to different insecticides? I mean, are you getting control by switching like that?
So if we try one, we have a regimen at EPLS where, and I think most companies do, where we try, you know, a certain systemic insecticide. We always put it down with another contact insecticide, so we get a dual mode of action. Then if this doesn't work, we switch to a different chemistry. But yes, we keep rotating chemistries in order to achieve the maximum results and minimize the chance of resistance.
Yep. I know Dr. Adam Dale at the University of Florida put out last year was saying that things that the homeowner might get. I mean, the homeowner can get some of the systemics, but they normally can't get the systemics in combination. So they'll get systemics, imidacloprid, rimarid, things like that. But it's not in combination with, say, a synthetic pyrethroid. But you all can do that. Now, Adam Dale has also suggested things like neem oil, acelaprin. Are they doing anything for you?
Neem oil has not done anything for me.
Okay.
Acelaprin is required for use in a very heavy dose, specifically for chinch bugs, and that is only labeled for suppression.
Yeah.
So it hasn't done as much for me as I was hoping that it would. And unfortunately, we're limited to a relatively few products as far as the active ingredients and the modes of action. There are hundreds of products out there, but they are limited to the different modes of action that they have, and they kind of like, you know, between similar to if you go get, you know, a pain medication from, you know, favorite grocery store or another grocery store, it's under a little bit of a different name.
Yeah,
but it's definitely the same thing.
Yeah. So here's what I'm thinking: if you've got resistant chinch bugs in your lawn, you're putting on the pesticides and they're not working, you better call a professional.
Absolutely. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. How about the side webworms? Seeing lots of those. I know in one of my communities, the new side came in and it was loaded with side webworms.
Right. Sod webworms are a problem every year. I've seen them crawling off of fresh sod on a pallet. So, you know, it's just one of those things where when the eggs are in there, the caterpillars hatch and they're going to start chewing. But they're easy to get rid of. The key is to go ahead and get them treated early so they don't cause too much damage.
Yeah. I think what people worry about the most are the moths rather than the caterpillar damage.
Yeah, absolutely. We get many, many phone calls every day that people have moths, and you know the moths are not treatable. They feed on nectar from plants.
Yeah, well, I tell them to use fly swatters and butterfly nets. That's the best control. Hey, Roy, it's been a pleasure having you with us. We didn't get the rest of the things that were on my list, but we'll do it another time. And I'm looking forward to tomato season here, so we can get the tomatoes growing.
Absolutely. And a little bit cooler weather. That'll be nice as well.
That will be nice as well. Okay, Roy Levin, we really appreciate you being with us, that's for sure, with EPLS, Environmental Pests and Lawn Services. You have a great gardening day.
You as well, Tom. Have a good day.
Okay. And always happy to have Roy. Full of knowledge, that's for sure. Like I said, graduate, University of Florida, in entomology and nematology. Roy spent a lot of time counting nematodes. He did a lot of work with a root knot nematode, and these things are little hair-type things. You can't even see them except under a microscope.
He's obviously got really good eyesight.
And he was there in a microscope just looking at the different types of root knot. All root knot is not the same, so it was kind of interesting. Hey, I tell you what, it's your turn. If you want to give us a call, feel free to 1-888-45-LAWNS. Or Texas 23680. We'll be waiting for your calls. Lizzie will be waiting for them. I'll be waiting for them also. We're going to a break. It's a perfect time to give us a call again. I'm Tom McCubbin, and you're listening to Better Lawns and Gardens. We're coming to you from the Summit Responsible Solutions Studios. This is Florida Talk and Entertainment Network. Good morning. morning again. Welcome back to Better Lawns and Gardens. Seems like it's never enough time to get all the questions in I want to ask my guests.
Yes.
And I had one here about lawn fertilizing. It's prohibited at this time of year in most areas, and some lawns are a bit yellow, and I am getting that question, and they want to know what to do to regreen the lawn. And so I can tell you, you can try iron. I just put it down on my lawn. Sunnyland has a granular iron product. You can get liquid iron products also and minor nutrients. But Sunnyland has one, and it goes through your spreader, and I put it down in about 2 to 3 days, the lawn turned a brighter green. So sometimes it's just an iron deficiency, but we can't use a regular lawn fertilizer in many areas, especially throughout central Florida. And if you want to try to green them up, you might just try the iron product and see if that helps.
Now, would it be possible, because I don't know, but it seems like if your plants turn yellow, it's either it's not enough water or there's too much. So could your lawn be getting too much water?
Yeah, too much water will do that, too. It'll affect the roots. But many of the lawns, it's just that they're running out of iron. They're running out of nitrogen also, which was my dirty word of the day, but we can't put the nitrogen down. So sometimes the iron will help by itself. Let's do that first text message. I'm not getting the text message.
Okay, let's see. Let me pull it up real quick. Okay, it says, did you want to do Tallahassee or
Yeah,
Venice?
Let's do Tallahassee.
Okay, it says, good morning, Tom. Great to hear you. This is Susan in Tallahassee. We are fighting nutgrass and spurge in the lawn. Is there a spray to kill both? Thanks.
Yeah, well, there's sprays for both of them, but I think you're going to have to do it separately. There is a product out there called Sedge Hammer, believe it or not, Sedge Hammer.
That's good stuff.
And I found that at Ace Hardware, for instance. You can get it at other garden centers. Peterson's probably has it for you also. You can get it and use that, and it'll be a good job. Ortho also has a sedge control. They call it a nut sedge killer that can be put down. And go after the weed that's the worst. If it's a spurge, you get one of the broadleaf weed killers. Roundup has a good product. It's for southern lawns. I assume that you're having a St. Augustine lawn. But it's a Roundup for southern lawns. It's the same type of product that's used by the commercial people often. So that might be a good one for you. So I think you're going to have to do two separate things, but go after the weed that's the worst at this time. If you get the Ortho product, I think it even has it, so you can just attach it to your hose, sedge killer. I think Bonide has one also. Most companies do.
Nice.
Let's do Venice one.
All right. It says, hi, Tom. After planting 40 years in my landscape, I've decided to try my first tomato plant. I want to put it in a container on a lattice that has southeast exposure and will get sun most of the day. Can you recommend a type of container, variety of tomato plant, and any special concerns? I'll be buying the plant at a local nursery and only enough for my wife and I to enjoy BLTs.
Okay.
Thanks, Mike from Venice.
Okay, so I guess that scratches the ones I like. I like the grape tomatoes or the cherry tomatoes. Big Beef is a good one. Better Boy. They're both good tomatoes to grow. The bigger the container, the better. I mean, 5 gallons would be the minimum. And then you want the bigger containers. If you can get a 15-gallon or even bigger, use that, because the tomatoes like to have plenty of room. Here's the other problem. Once the tomato plant gets some size to it, uses lots of water. And quite often we can't keep up with the water. And if it doesn't get enough water, you get blossom end rot, which is a problem with the bottom of the tomato. So get a big container, get a nice slicer, Better Boy. I like one called Better Bell, Rosie, I think it is. It's probably not going to be available. But Big Boy, Better Boy, there be. Champion will be another one that you'll find at your garden centers.
The Big Boy is good. I always did the beefsteak, and then I found the Big Boy, and I'm like, okay, that's an upgrade for me personally.
Big Boy is one that's been out there, and it's done a good job for us. And Better Boy also is another good one.
That's it, yes.
Okay, so let's see. We have enough time to go to Diane in Tallahassee. Diane, good morning to you.
Good morning. Always here. Good to hear your voice.
Well, thank you. It's nice to have you with us. How can I help you today?
I bought these beautiful flowers in planters, and they look like mandevillas, but the flowers are just slightly smaller.
But they still want to climb, apparently.
Yeah.
And I didn't think they were going to climb that much. Well, I just untangled all the things, and they're like 4 feet, almost 5 feet long. Can I cut them off, or is that going to be a problem?
No, you can cut them back. It may slow down the flowering. Diplodemia, I think, is the plant you're talking about. It looks just like Mandevilla. I'm not sure they aren't the same. At least they're relatives anyway. And anytime you cut a plant back like that, it puts it into a juvenile state. And what you find is that you may not get flowering quite as soon again.
Oh.
Yeah. So
okay.
These plants are meant to climb. So if you want to, you know, the more room you can give them, the more you let them climb. If it's getting out of control, then you don't have any choice but to cut them back.
Okay. Well, that's helpful. Thank you.
Okay. You're quite welcome. You have a great gardening day. Appreciate it. If you want to text us, you certainly can. And, of course, the number here is 23680 for texting. Or if you want to give us a call, Lizzie will take your call. And if she's busy, just let it ring, 1-888-455-2967, and you can get with us that way. So we'll be happy to have you with us. I have several callers up right now, but to be fair, we're going to have to head to break, and then we'll get to your call. So don't go away. Just stay there. One Bill in Georgetown wants to know when the watermelon is ready. I assume the watermelon in his yard, because I am not growing watermelon, that's for sure.
Did you want to chat with him? We got a minute.
Can we do that?
Yep.
Okay, Bill in Georgetown, we got a minute, Lizzie says. How can we help you?
Yeah. Well, I've got this watermelon I planted from seed, and it's growing on the railing of my porch, and it's hanging. And it's not going to have a yellow spot on the bottom because it's going to be all green. When is that going to be ready to pick?
Are you good at wrapping the melons when they got that hollow sign sound that normally indicates? Also, what some people use is a tendril. You know what a tendril is on the watermelon vine?
Yeah.
Okay, when the one closest to the watermelon turns brown. That is normally an indication also. But your watermelon probably will also get yellowish on the bottom. Even though it's hanging like that, it'll start to yellow up on the bottom. So you've got the hollow sound, you got the yellowing on the bottom, you got the tendril that turns brown, and if you pick it at that point, if it looks like it's ripe, I would leave it to go for another little bit of time.
Okay, well, at least the fire ants aren't going to get this one because it's hanging.
Well, that's good. How big is it?
Right now, last week it was the size of a walnut. This week it's a little bit less than a soccer ball.
Wow. Okay. Well, you're getting a good sized watermelon there.
Yeah.
It's getting close.
Well, I don't know how many. I'll have to wait another 3 or 4 weeks for it to get mature. It's not even any. But I just wanted to know when to pick it.
Did you got it supported real well?
I've got the vine tied onto the railing, yes.
You're probably going to have to support the melon also. Hey, Bill, it's good to hear from you. You have a great gardening day. Take care. Okay, so we're going to take a break right now. You still have time, okay? Number here is 1-888-455-2967, or you can text me at 23680. I'm Tom McCubbin, and this is Florida's Talk and Entertainment Network. Welcome back to Better Lawns and Gardens. Tom McCubbin here. Lizzie's at the controls. If you still have time, if you still want to get a call into us, it's 1-888-455-2967, or you can text me at 23680. The number again to call is 1-888-455-2967. And we're going to go to one of those callers right now, Bill in Orlando. Bill, good morning to you.
Good morning, Tom. Good to hear your voice. We replaced our lawn again. We've had zoysia. We like the texture. And I heard your last guest recommending not to do anything until the fall. Are there any varieties of zoysia that are resistant to the chinch bug problem, or do they attack them at all?
No, and zoysia does not get chinch bugs, so you're okay there.
Okay, and are there any varieties? I see there's new ones that are more preferable on zoysia.
You know, I really haven't kept track of all of them, but Empire is still probably out there as one of the main ones. You know, the zoysia is not pest-free. Doesn't get chinch bugs, but you get bill bugs. You get mealy bugs. So you've got to stay on top of it. In fact, I was going to ask Roy about that because he does a lot of zoysia lawns. And I just ran out of time. But I think he would tell you mealy bugs, tuttle mealy bug, and bill bugs. They're all a problem with zoysia also. So you're trading one lawn problem for another when you get zoysia.
Gotcha. A quick question. Also, we have Mediterranean house, and we have some Italian cypress, and we've replaced those I don't know how many times, and you know, we used thiamyl on it to fight back mites. Is there anything that we could do to you know, have a better crop on the Italian cypress?
Are you using the oil sprays, the Summit year-round oil spray?
Not year-round. We just put some starters in, maybe they're about 6 or 7 feet tall, and they're declining already.
Okay, well, the Summit is a product called Summit year-round oil spray, and that's the name of it. If it's mites, then that should do a good job on it. You also have an insecticidal soap, and you do have some miticides also out there, but you just have to stay on top of it. I mean, it can be a constant problem. Is it the mites that are causing them to go out right now, or is it due to the fact that when they were planted, the root balls were dry and they haven't been re-wet? There's a lot of things to look at.
We just got them recently, but it's been, as you know, very rainy, so I haven't looked closely other than to see it's browning.
Yeah, dig down, look at the roots. I mean, if that root ball was dry at the time of planting, all the rains coming are not going to re-wet it probably. So dig down. You may need to build a berm around it and make sure the water goes down through the root ball. You should. How long ago did you have them put in?
Well, that's the thing I meant to tell you. I should have said they're still in the containers.
Oh, they're still in the containers. Okay. Well,
right.
They shouldn't be having a problem like that at all. Just make sure those root balls are moist. If they dry out, you've got a problem. They're going to start to brown out. But you shouldn't be having that big a problem with them. How long you had them?
Oh, just a few months.
Yeah, well,
3 months.
Well, that's a pretty good period of time where things can happen. You know, you do get diseases on them also. What you need to do probably, Bill, is take some of the leaves. They're like any other evergreen. Take some of those, which is just starting to show the problem, to your extension office and see if they can tell anything. They'll be able to tell if it's mites, it's scale. They can probably even tell whether it's needle blight or something of that nature.
Okay. As always, thank you kindly.
Okay, good luck to you. I hope it helps you out a little bit. Have a great gardening day. The Italian cypress can be a real problem. I mean, we do get mites, we do get scale insects, and then we get things such as needle blight, and that'll cause browning. But shouldn't cause the whole plant to brown out like that. And that's why I'm looking for root problems. I'm looking for a lack of water at some time, which may have caused it to have that problem.
Yes. We have a text from JAC from Cocoa Beach, he's having a problem starting his cherry tomato seeds in a pot, or starting his tomato seeds, period.
Yeah.
What would be the right pot and location?
Okay, JAC, the tomatoes, you and I are starting them at the same time now. And what I use small containers. I use the little small pots, or I use cell containers. And, you know, if you have fresh seed, you should be able to put one seed to cell or one seed to container. And tomato seed's very reliable. Now, if it's been in the refrigerator for a good while or it's been sitting out, then I'd probably sow all the seeds in what I call a community pot. And that is one pot filled with either germination mix or potting soil. Germination mix is good because the particles are smaller, but tomato seeds are good size, so you should be able to grow them in potting soil. Get that at your garden center. And one seed per cell or per container. Keep them moist, keep them in the full sun. You can actually keep them in the shade until they start to germinate, which at this time of the year is in about 5 days or less, and they'll come up. and then you keep them in full sun and grow them on from there. As they get some size, once they get 4 to 6 inches tall, then you need to move them into a bigger container. And as I mentioned to a previous caller, the container needs to be at least 5 gallons to have good tomatoes in containers. If you want to put them in the ground, then at about 4 to 6 inches, 8 inches at the maximum, you go ahead and you plant them in the ground. So there we go.
We also have another text. Says, hi, Tom. Will my Mandeville climb and cling to a 6-foot PVC pipe?
You know, I'm thinking that those pipes are pretty slick, and it depends on the size of it. But, yeah, you can get it to grow there. Once it starts vining, then you have to train it to it, and you may even have to tie it to it. That's a possibility.
Okay.
You may even want to put up some other grid, some other wire grid, but it will climb. There's no doubt about that. We good?
We are good.
Okay, so let's give you some of the things that we can be doing here in the landscape. Lawn care, I think, as Roy pointed out, most of the lawns have recovered from winter. July, in my book, is a good time to fill the bare spots and now weedy spots left by winter. Get the weeds out and ones that are affected by pests. Application of an iron-only product can regreen the lawn. We mentioned that. So here's the vegetable things to do. I started off the program telling you that my vegetable garden was getting prepared. I got the weeds knocked down. I'm rototilling it. It's time to remove all the declining vegetables and get rid of the weeds, because weeds will harbor pests, and that can be a problem. So you get them under control. And even those near the garden, we don't often think of the weeds outside the garden, but if there's weeds in the garden area, then we need to go through and get them under control. If we don't, then we find that you may harbor pests also. We can start our tomato, pepper, eggplant seeds at this time to have them for July. If you want to grow melons like cantaloupes, also watermelon can be planted at that time. Bill called in and said he had a nice watermelon going to be ready to pick pretty soon, but we start those around the 1st of August. We can use any organic matter to improve the soil. If it's manures, normally we use composted manures, and that will help out also. Things to do in the landscape. Lots of winter damage is still around. I was at a meeting yesterday, and we were talking about winter damage. Time to get it all out. If the plant is dead, get it out. If it's dying back to the ground, go ahead and prune it back to the ground. And this is a time we can get everything under control like that. summer rains have stimulated a lot of new growth. Performed a timely pruning to keep the plants in bounds. We had a couple of callers about some vining plants there, Mandevilla, for instance. If it's a vining-type plant, it's better to provide enough shrub growing room for these type of plants. And so a trellis or whatever it might be. If we cut them back, it keeps them from flowering. It may keep them compact, but it may keep them from flowering. Don't wear out your plants. Give them a little time to grow. A lot of people have a habit of pruning back shrubs, you know, once a month or whatever it might be, sometime more often than that. Trying to let them grow a little bit. One of the big problems we have is we wear out the shrubs. We keep pruning them back to the same height all the time, and that can become a problem. Use pruners to selectively remove the stems and stems if need to. And lower leaves can be removed from trees that interfere with traffic and work. So those are just some of the things that you might think about doing. I want to thank my guest today, Roy Levin, Vice President and Manager, Environmental Pests and Services. And here's a reminder for you. If your local station doesn't broadcast Better Lawns and Gardens, you might give them a call and ask them to get us up every Saturday morning. Please remember to check our sponsors, Black Cow, Summit Responsible Solutions, Quality Green Specialists with Dana Venrick in DeLand, Peterson's Nursery with Howie and Karen in Lakeland. They have an orchid program coming up, I think, next weekend. And, of course, we want to thank Lizzie for keeping us under control here and keeping us up on the air. And, of course, we're coming to you from the Summit Responsible Solutions Studios. And this is Better Lawns and Gardens, and I'm Tom McCubbin.